Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Landon Mayer, and he'll be answering your most important questions on trout hunting Colorado's four seasons. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Landon a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address on the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Landon Mayer about trout hunting Colorado's four seasons. The Federation of Fly Fishers needs your support. Its conservation projects at both the national and club level are addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. It is involved in the Mangrove Recovery Initiative in Florida, in the Trout of the Desert Southwest Initiative to help recovery of rare native trout, the Endangered Fisheries Initiative, and is helping to prevent the introduction of harmful aquatic species to new waters with their Clean Angling Pledge. The Federation won a National Conservation Award for its efforts. To continue this great work on behalf of all fly fishers, the Federation needs to increase its membership. It needs more concerned anglers willing to join in support of such projects, and by doing so, give back something to the sport that has given so much to each of us. Join the Federation of Fly Fishers today and help support their fine work. For more information, go to the Federation website at www.fedflyfishers.org. That's www.fedflyfishers.org. Well, before we introduce Landon, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. And for our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and look for the link under Landon's section that says click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We will also be giving away a copy of Landon's latest book, Colorado's Best Fly Fishing. And here's how you can win his book. And this is courtesy, by the way, of Stackpole Books and Headwater Books, publishers of this fine book and many others. And if you want to learn more about Stackpole and the books they offer, go to stackpolebooks.com. That's www.stackpolebooks.com. So here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer a question we ask at the end of the show. And the question is going to be something that Landon and I talk about during the show. You must submit your answer along with your name, location, and the text box on our homepage. So listen closely and use your best typing skills, and maybe you'll be lucky enough to be the winner of Landon's latest book, Colorado's Best Fly Fishing. Tonight our guest is Landon Mayer. Landon is a professional fly fishing guide in the Woodland Park, Colorado area, calling the South Platte River his home waters. He's been guiding on these waters for the past 14 years, as well as 1 year in Alaska. Passion and love for the sport of fly fishing is what motivates Landon. His success in catching trout is fueled by an addiction of pursuing large trout with small flies and lightweight fly fishing equipment. Landon also displays enthusiasm in teaching and demonstrating his techniques and on-river knowledge to fellow anglers. Through trial and error and perseverance, he has developed innovative techniques for sighting, hooking, and landing selective trout. He's sharing these techniques and secrets in his books titled Colorado Best Fly Fishing by Stackpole, Sight Fishing for Trout, also by Stackpole, and How to Catch the Biggest Trout of Your Life, published by Wild River Press. And his DVD, Landing the Trout of Your Life and Weapons of Bass Production, featuring John Barr, which was produced by Mad Trout Media. Landon is a contributing writer for High Country Angler and Fly Fisherman magazine, and has also been featured in major publications such as Fly Rod and Reel, American Angler, and Fish and Fly. He currently teaches by guiding fly fishing classes and gives presentations on his techniques. Landon is an ambassador for Sims Fly Fishing Apparel and is an advisory team member of Sims, Ross Reels, 3M Scientific Angler, Smith Optics, Ross Worldwide, Fish Pond, and Outcast. Well, Landon, welcome back to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be back, and I look forward to the show.
Yeah, it's nice to have you back, and Landon has been here before, as I indicated. He's a couple of other shows with us, and if you want to look for those shows, you can find those in our archive. they kind of correlate with his books, but our other shows with him were Fly Fishing for Big, Huge, Monster Trophy Trout and Sight Fishing for Trout. So you might want to look in our archive for those shows as well. We went into great detail on catching big trout and sight fishing. So, and also his books are terrific in those lines too. Anyway, you finished this book recently, Landon, and it was about, you know, kind of showing off and directing and guiding people to some of the best places in the state of Colorado. And, of course, I live here, you live here, we love this state. And so we thought tonight that we'd talk about several, you know, maybe five different rivers and seasons to fish those rivers to give people an overview on that. But before we do that, I'd like to address a couple questions because we had a question by George and also Thomas in Redmond, Washington, who both asked about access and stream rights. And I think that's an appropriate place to maybe start before we talk about rivers, because every state is different and this kind of affects how you can fish these rivers as well. So do you want to explain how that works in Colorado and maybe contrast it to some of the other states?
Absolutely. I think best contrast is going to be with Montana on the high water mark. In Colorado, the access to private water is limited. And what I mean by that is in Colorado, there's not a high water mark. Both sides of the bank are not public, and the river bottom is not public, leaving the only public water the surface. So if you're floating through the water, you can't touch river bottom, you can't stand on the banks, you can't wade, and then you also cannot anchor. It's different from other areas like Montana as a state, to where you can move about the water and stay below the high water mark and still be legal. So in Colorado, if there is private and public water, just try to pinpoint by using the book or other references with maps to find out where the local water is that's public and be able to fish that. If you do float through water that is private, just make sure that you abide by the laws and you don't touch any structure, you don't anchor, and you don't get on the bank, and that will make everybody's experience in the state very good.
Isn't it? Yeah, so our state similar to Wyoming as well? Don't they treat it similarly?
Pretty much, yeah. It's pretty similar to Wyoming, and I know other states have had challenges trying to be able to reach a high water mark, but with how much water is in Colorado and how much public access there is, while it is challenging not to be able to float some of the waters to the full extent, there's still plenty of water left for anglers to explore and some of the best fishing throughout the U.S. So all in all, it works out for the best for the anglers and the private landowners as well.
Okay, good. Well, with that out of the way, let's dig into some of the areas. And you, in your book, Colorado's Best Fly Fishing, you broke the state out into basically five geographic regions or sections. And I thought we'd do the same for this show. And I know we have a lot of people that visit us, even for just sometimes a half a day to go fishing. So,
sure.
You know, people fly in, do a business trip, go up, get a guide, you know, do a little fishing.
Mm-hmm.
So the accessibility of a lot of our fisheries is, I think, pretty important. But so let's start out with northeastern Colorado and kind of dig into that. In the book, you covered Cache La Poudre, Big Thompson River, and then Rocky Mountain National Park as the three major areas there. So let's talk about one of those, because just for lack of time tonight, we're not going to be able to dig into them all, but why don't you pick one there and tell me what's special about that area to you?
I'll go ahead and choose the Cache La Poudre, the Poudre, and I think what makes that place special for me as far as the waterways, while my brother attended college at CSU, Colorado State University, we used to venture up there quite a bit and take time off of school and time off for vacation and off of school hours and go and fish the water and experience some of the hatches. And there's so much water to explore in the Poudre that is very unique. And the water is diverse in the sense that you can go up top above the hatchery or the canyon stretch and fish for smaller fish. And as you work down all the way into town, you can experience larger trout and the hatches and all the different waterways in between. So it's became a special place I used to share with family members and friends, and has lived up to that to this day. And a very special fishery, and one that I think's overlooked sometimes by anglers as we pursue the more famous waterways. But that's the beauty of our state, is we have so much water that's open to the public. And a lot of time, the big waters get the public eye and the smaller waters do not, and not as professional waterways in some areas of the state. But I think this one is definitely a class act on its own.
Now, I'm trying to remember, did the Poudre have some problems years ago? Was it with whirling disease or some fish kill kind of thing?
It was whirling disease, and there's been some spills. There's been some flooding situations, and I think that's pretty par for the course for a lot of the rivers throughout the state. But all in all, the populations of fish and size of fish still remain strong, and as long as you hit it during low water conditions, that's one of the best time frames to fish the waterway.
Okay, so, you know, we talked about exploring the different seasons. What season do you think is the best season to fish the Cashel Cooter?
I would say that my favorite season to fish it is probably going to be to late summer into fall. And when I say fall, all the way into late fall before we transfer into the winter months. And you have a lot of access to the water. Conditions are not as ideal as you get during the summer months, but the water levels are low to where you have more fish exposed, you have more areas to fish, and that's when you get into some quality trout and also some of the hatches and what takes on the river itself. So I would probably say late summer all the way through November is going to be, so August through November is probably my favorite time to fish it.
Now, this year, do we have to push that back 2 months because of
the
water we have in Colorado?
We are receiving so much water in the state. It's a blessing in disguise. But, yeah, I would probably push it back a little bit. I would say the middle of this month is going to be ideal for flows to be low enough to have access to the fish. And it may extend with the high water marks where it won't freeze over as fast into middle to late November. But you're still going to have the great experience on the water during that time frame.
Can you kind of describe and I know there's so many places on the river to fish, but can you kind of give us an overview of, you know, the sections and what makes those sections different from one another?
Oh, absolutely. I think the sections on the waterway itself are ideal to where if you go all the way up the canyon to close to the top of the canyon where you get skinnier waterways, it fishes well. One of my personal favorite areas to fish is near the hatchery, which is designated wild trout water. And you can travel all the way down the canyon and have access along the road. And then another spot that's ideal that is overlooked and a little bit more challenging but also rewards bigger browns is in town along the Cooter Trail in Fort Collins, and that also supplies some great fishing. So if you start in town or if you start all the way up the canyon by Sleeping Elephant and Aspen Glen, you're going to have good access from there all the way down to the wild trout waters and then further downstream from there into Fort Collins. So those three spots, I'd say, are ideal. And quite honestly, if you travel the river at low flows, you're going to be driving along the road and looking over to the left or looking over to the right, and whatever you think is ideal water, as long as it's public, which most of it is, you can pull over and fish it. That's one of the beauties of the Cooter.
Now, and the Cooter does change its character as it comes down the mountain, doesn't it? Can you kind of describe how it changes?
It does. It's going to start out with skinnier water. It's going to seem more creek style. It'll open up and have more islands as you get in the middle of the canyon towards the wild trout water. And then as you travel down and closer to town, it's going to turn into, I guess, what you would call more frog water with calmer water settings, big, deep plunge pools. So it's going to change in the way it looks and the way it runs, and the gradient of the water, too, is also going to change. But I would say up top, look for more of the canyon setting with creek-style fishing. The middle section is going to be a classic freestone look, and as you get closer into town, it's going to be a little bit of calmer water settings.
Yeah, right. They do quite a bit of rafting on this river, too, on the lower section, right?
They do, yes. And you can raft it and fish it, but I think probably the best way to access the water and to really effectively fish and cover it thoroughly is going to be the walkway experience.
Right, right. Yeah, and it certainly is very accessible, like you said.
It is.
Drive along, look for a good spot, and pull over.
That's one of the beauties of Colorado, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what kind of fish are we fishing for in the Cashel Cooter?
You're going to have the browns, the bows, the rainbows, brown trout, cut bows, a few cutthroats. I would say that towards the canyon stretch up high, you're going to have more the rainbows, cut bows, cutthroats. And as you get closer into town, you're going to deal with more brown trout. You'll also have brown trout in the canyon. A lot of the bigger brown trout are found in town. So those are going to be primarily the four species. And the fish can range in sizes anywhere from 8 inches up to some fairly large fish, which can be a great surprise for a lot of anglers, upwards of 25 to 26 inches long.
Wow. Yeah, you wouldn't think of I don't think most people think of the Cooter River as a big fish river.
It's really not. It's more of a dry fly area, more of a dry dropper or nymphing for smaller fish, but there are the surprise fish, especially in the wild trout waters near the hatchery, where you can have the unexpected surprise that a large fish will take the fly, and that was the experience I had two years ago, when I was exploring Colorado State and getting all the information together for the book. I was able to experience that up there during a cold day in November.
Yeah, you have a picture of that fish in your book, don't you?
I do, yes, and it was quite the surprise, and the water was almost completely frozen over, but some of the deeper plunge pools had little openings before the ice was covering the lower tail out of the run, and happened to fish that with my wife, Michelle, and a good friend of ours, Brandon Kramer, and luckily hooked into a fish that I ended up sight fishing, which was nice because the flows were so low and clear. Once I hooked the fish and it started fighting like a rainbow from the South Platte or the Taylor River, it was a pleasant surprise 5 minutes later to get something like that in the net. So while you hear about the stories, I guess I'm living proof, and so are others that have experienced that there are some larger fish throughout all waterways in Colorado.
And how big was that fish?
That fish was around 25 inches, close to 7 pounds.
Wow, it's beautiful. Good photograph of you doing that fish.
But it doesn't show us how cold it was, but it was a short trip, but well worth it.
Yeah, so you were screaming, rubbing your hands together after you let that fish
exactly.
go.
Recovery session, exactly.
Yeah, recovery for you too, the angler. So what are some of the, if you're going up to the Cache La Poudre, some of the hatches you might expect there, and, if you've got a favorite hatch you like there that you like to fish, maybe you can tell us about that.
Yeah, you can experience stoneflies, you can experience caddis, blueing olives, red quills. I'd say, honestly, outside of the best hatch to fish is mimicking a stonefly imitation or an attractor draw with a dropper and extending hackles or longer legs and making it really buggy, attracting the fish on the edges of the banks or some of the fish in tailouts of rocks or pools, I think is one of the most effective ways to fish. So if I were, say, targeting a hatch, I would definitely try to target the stonefly. That's a little bit sketchy because you may have high water marks or you may have high water from runoff. If that's the case, then concentrate on the green drakes, the red quills, and also the caddis as well. I think those three will produce some great results.
And you've got also in your book, you have a hatch chart there so you know when the hatches are, what season they're in, and so forth, which is great.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There was a question about from Ray specifically from St. Petersburg, Florida, and he said, Landon, I'll be out in the berth at Fort Loveland, Fort Collins area in mid-September for my son's wedding. We'll love to do some fly fishing there. What are your suggestions for a beautiful river with some decent-sized fish within a 50-mile drive?
Well, absolutely.
Would that be the Poudre in your mind? Is that the...
I would think the Poudre around the hatchery area, the wild trout water. I would also encourage him to explore the water below Olympus Dam, the Big Thompson, and also the inlet to Lake Estes, I think, is also going to supply some nice fish that may be running up in mid-September. And that's a great time of year, too, because the flows are low. Most of the hatches have came and gone, and we'll be dealing with some blueing olives and some other flies moving about the water. But the fish will be hungry and looking up, so you can do a lot of dry flies, and you could also do some streamers or some bigger fish that are getting aggressive for the fall season to come.
Great. And I think Ray's going to be pleasantly surprised to find out how much fishing is within that 50 miles of where he's going to be.
Absolutely. He might have to extend his stay.
Yeah, there you go. Or skip the wedding.
That's right.
That's probably not going to happen. Okay, so anything else you wanted to mention about northeastern Colorado, or maybe brief mentions about the other streams up there?
You know, I think Rocky Mountain National Park, the Big Thompson, Cache La Poudre, they're all great rivers and great waterways, and the whole focus and main drive for the book was to select the best of what the state has to offer. And with our native fish, the greenback cutthroats in Rocky Mountain National Park, the access to truly beautiful fish throughout all these waterways, the Big Thompson River, which has some unbelievable winter fishing right at the tail out below the dam, and then the Poudre, which has so much water access. I think those three are great areas to venture through, try to fish. And again, they're oftentimes overlooked for the more popular rivers in the state, so you don't run into as many crowds, especially if you try to target it during the early seasons, the late seasons of the year, where the weather's not as good and maybe a little bit cooler or flows are low, but that's going to give you more access to the fish.
Great. Terrific. Well, we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll be talking with Landon Mayer more about trout hunting Colorado's four season. Our approach is simple. Education. Fly Fusion is unique when it comes to fly fishing magazines. It is one of only a few magazines in North America that focuses on instruction and education. In Fly Fusion, we've covered subjects like short line nymphing, tactics for tough days, stillwater fly patterns, dry fly fishing for fussy trout, and a host of other interesting and educational topics. Visit our website today at www.flyfusionmag.com. That's www.flyfusionmag.com. And start your subscription today to Fly Fusion so that you can learn all you need to know about fly fishing. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. And we're talking with Landon Mayer about trout hunting Colorado's four seasons. If you'd like to ask Landon a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com. And use the Q&A text box there to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And take a look here. I'm just taking a look here, Landon, and see if a few questions came in while we're talking, and we'll take a look at those here. But while I'm scanning that, why don't you, I always ask my guests this point in the show, you know, what's going on in your fly fishing world. So tell us what you're up to. Tell us about your books and your website and everything that's going on.
Absolutely. Still doing everything I've been doing as far as work on the water since day one. Still guiding full-time, doing about 200 days a year, working through the website, landonmare.com, and just finished the Colorado's Best Fly Fishing book, which was a great project. And I want to take a brief moment just to mention how many great anglers contributed in the project, over 42 throughout the whole state. And we're very blessed and lucky to live in a state with such a great community. So thank you, everybody, for their help and support with this project. And also doing teachings and speaking engagements and on-the-water work with sight fishing for trout. I'm a trout hunter by nature and love to show enthusiasm and teach others the way of a trout hunter on the water. And also How to Catch the Biggest Trout of Your Life is also in print and still working with that book. So this season coming up for the winter months, I'm going to be doing quite a few speaking engagements at various states, and you can find all that through my website at landonmare.com. And from there, I'll be on the water, and I look forward to seeing you there. If you have any questions, you can also reach me through the website as well.
Oh, terrific, terrific. So, again, why don't you repeat your website address to make sure everybody got it?
Sure. It's landonmare, LandonMayer.com.
There we go. Good. Well, we did get some questions. Thanks for sharing that with us. And folks, if you haven't gotten his books in the past, they're incredible books, and you'll learn so much from them. They're well worth the buy. Question came in from David Schull in Dallas, Georgia. He says, is there a publication or website that discusses the seasonal location and techniques? Basically, this book, right?
Yes. The book's main drive and purpose is to talk about timing, which would be the seasons, and techniques and strategies from the top authorities on the water. And we just finished talking about the Pooter, and one of the great anglers for many years and authors in our sport, Eric Patin, contributed a lot of text and work, and so did great angler Grant Hugh at St. Peter's Fly Shop. So every chapter is going to have two or three authorities from that waterway, and that's what the book is driven for, is techniques, strategies, and timing.
Great. Well, we did an interview with Eric Patin on, I believe it was Nymphing, so another one in our archive that folks might want to look up who was a contributor to Landon's book. So that's great. And there are some other, as we go through these, we might talk about some of these other experts that contributed to your book also have specific books of their own that may address a particular piece of water, you know, in more depth than that. So if you think of those while we go through, you know, you might want to share those with folks. I'm going to, Landon, there's some questions coming in that are about fishing and stuff, and I'm just going to kind of mix these in here, okay? John Ward in Ithaca, New York, I take. He says, what brand and model of polarized glasses to use and why?
Great question. The brand that I use is Smith Optics, a great company, and I've been working with them for many years. And the gentleman I work with there is the manager, Peter Crow. And I would say there's two models that I prefer using. One is glass and one is polycarbonate plastic. I use plastic if I'm on the water for an extended period of time so they're not as heavy, and I use glass on the water if I'm specifically hunting a waterway during tough conditions. And the glass models that I like to use are the Hideouts. Hideouts.
Oh, Hideouts. Okay.
Yep. Hideouts, and then also the Tenet, T-E-N-E-T. And for the plastic lens, I like to use the Shelters. And I believe the best tent color for any situation when you're trout hunting or sight fishing is going to be copper or brown. It's light enough for dark days and dark enough for light days, which in Colorado is a huge issue with all the different weather systems we have moving through.
Okay, there you go. And we talked about that quite extensively, too, in sight fishing. We did your show.
You did.
Sight fishing, yeah. Okay, let me see what else. Okay, here's one, too, that may relate to, you may recommend the same area we just talked about. Ed Golden in Prairie Village, he says, I'm bringing my grandson out to Denver to fish in mid-September, and we'd like to hike and wade. Just hike and wade. Your recommendation, we're staying in Boulder and have 2 days.
Hike and wade. If you're in Boulder, you could do Clear Creek, which would be a fun experience. Do the Pooter as well, which would be a great experience. And also, you could venture up to the Big Thompson. I would say if they'd like to hike around and wade, the Big Thompson might be a great fishery, especially below the dam and further downstream into the canyon as well.
Right. And the park is just around the corner, too, right?
Yeah, the park is. I would definitely say the park usually is fishing at its prime and lowest flow possible. So September all the way into October is probably the prime seasons. But you could definitely venture into the park, and if you find that the park has a little bit too much crowds from people visiting, then you can always venture down to the Big Thompson and also experience that as well.
There you go. Okay, and here I might as well knock this one more off here. John Ward in Ithaca, New York, he says, what are some of the things and ways you do upon meeting a new client to ensure an enjoyable outing? And what are your go-to methods when times get tough? Sounds like a future client there, Landon.
Yeah, it does. I take every trip as a different experience, a new trope, a new approach, and a new adventure. Every time I'm on the water, the way that I like to do guide trips is the teaching, catch, and experience. So you don't just catch the fish. You don't just go into a run and try to get a drag-free drift. There's a process and procedure from the beginning to end. So the trip usually starts out with a demonstration on the water. I walk you through each step of the cast, presentation, the hookup, the fight, so that at the end of the first fight, you have an idea of how we're going to battle a lot of the fish on the waterways. So we'll move about the day doing that, and I'll talk about sight fishing and just really make it an enjoyable experience to where you leave the water that day with my hope of being a better angler. So that works out very well.
Great, great. Okay, let's move on to southeastern Colorado. And in your book, you discuss Canoas River and Rio Grande River. Mm-hmm. So which one of those would you like to talk about?
Let's talk about the Canoas.
Okay, okay. Well, that's a beautiful river, by the way, I think. I
mean, it is.
When I drive over down there towards, sometimes go that way towards the San Juan, you know, it's you pull out over that valley and you see that Canoas stretching out there. It always looks perfect western river. So what makes the Canoas special to you?
You know, the Canoas to me is special just because when you experience the water, what you think is a typical area for a fish to hold a lot of times is not. I think one of the biggest things about the Canoas, which I find so intriguing, is how large of a hatch chart they have. In the book, it's a whole page. Anything from squalla stoneflies in the spring all the way down to most of your mayflies, most of your drakes, and it's just a lot of your stoneflies are up there as well. It has a lot of insects, fish, like you said, beautiful scenery, and some great challenges for anglers to pursue.
Yeah, I notice you have, in contrast to the pooter, you've got a big, I'm trying to find it here, for streamers, you've got a rather large bar going across from April to October. So do you see that as a big streamer river, right?
It can be, yes, just because there's so many areas for the fish to tuck in and hide in high or low water. And in addition to that, there are some very large and aggressive fish. And I think that being able to apply different disciplines every day that you're fishing increases your chances of hooking larger trout. So I always encourage anglers to go with the dry flies and go with the streamers in addition to the nymphing. And the results can be spectacular, especially when you get dark water or high water conditions, or you get cloudy or dark days. That can be some great streamer fishing. So good anglers like Devin Entz, who was great in contributing so much text in the book from the Canoas and about the Canoas, is such a great fisher, and streamers definitely work well.
Okay, let's again talk about, you know, kind of describe the river and its different major sections so that people can get oriented there.
Sure. Yeah, the river's above Plateau. You've got Skinny Waterway flowing into Plateau Reservoir. And then from the dam downstream, you have the meadow section, which is a nice, beautiful meadow setting. Below that, the water picks up speed. You go down through the Pinnacles. And down further from there, you go to Highway 17 Bridge, where the river calms down a little bit more. And that goes through Aspen Glade. And then further downstream, the closer you get to Antonito, then you don't have as much water that's fishing as good as you do below the dam just because temperatures tend to get a little bit warmer and the water's a little bit calmer and froggier. You can do well down there, but I would say the sections from above Plateau all the way down, top ones are going to be above in the fall. And then the Pinnacles during the summer is one of my favorite spots to fish, where you go down into the canyon walls and experience some of the faster water. And then down by Highway 17 Bridge, you can get some great dry fly activity as well.
Now, it shows on your map there, because you have maps of all this in your book, it looks like a dirt road that follows up the Canoas all the way to the dam, basically. Is that
it does, yes. And once you're on that dirt road, it's going to travel for quite a ways. And you'll leave the water and then come next to the water, and there's pull-ups and designated spots, which are in the text. And anglers like Devin Entz at the Canoas River Anglers will be able to help you out. If you ever have any questions, you can definitely call his shop and ask him. He'd be able to give you the proper instructions on where to drive.
So is it a typical tailwater below the Toro Dam?
I don't say it would be typical. I would say that it's fairly challenging. A lot of the, not challenging in the sense that you won't do well, but sometimes you can show up to a tailwater and you'll see a lot of fish holding there because the water's cooler. It's a great setting for the fish to have cover, oxygen, food supply. One thing that's unique about the Canales River is a lot of fish love to hold in some of the faster water settings, fast seams off of rocks, riffled runs. So it really makes an angler go above and beyond where you're having to explore water in addition to sight fishing. And once you do hook some of these fish, especially in the faster water settings, the fight can be a challenge as well. So I would definitely say the meadow section, you'll get a little bit calmer stretch, but as you go down into the canyon, you're going to deal with some fish that are holding in what I like to call the waters in between. So that's the waters in between the deeper runs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, again, in your book, you have some pictures of some rather nice fish.
Yes.
It looks like a couple of them that are 20-plus fish in there as well. So there's some big fish in the Canales.
There are some big fish, and the Canales fluctuates quite a bit in water flow, so the fish have to adapt and adjust, but some of these large aggressive fish will hold territory in certain areas, and with big bows and big browns and great hatches for dry flies, it's definitely a river you want to experience. And in September, I think it's the prettiest river in the state of Colorado with all the aspens changing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can definitely agree with you there. Now, is that might be the prettiest time, but what do you think is the – you said the Meadows area was – or no, not the Meadows area. The Pinnacles was one of your favorite places in summertime. So what time is your favorite time to go up there if you're going to, you know, talk about the whole river?
Probably for myself and I know interviewing great anglers and authorities from that waterway, I would definitely say that their prime season is going to be mid to late summer as the flows start to subside. This year, the Canales actually did not receive the moisture the rest of the state did, so these had excellent fishing similar to some of the South Platte drainages. In midsummer down through the end of fall months tends to be the best, and that's when the water is at its peak and it starts to slowly drop and subside and everything's exposed, the water's a little bit clearer. So I would probably say if you went to venture on that water in first, second week of July all the way through the month of November, you'd be in good shape and be able to experience some good fishing. November, the flows may be a little low, so you'd have to definitely check on what the weather patterns and systems are, but you could go all the way into October and have some great fishing and some years be able to go into November.
And what's the fishing pressure like there compared to other rivers we've been talking about?
Nothing like some of the other rivers just because it's so far away. The southern part of the state, a lot of times it's a drive of 4 or 5 hours, so you will get anglers up there experiencing the water, but a lot of times they'll book a guide and go out with an expert for that day, so you're not going to have near the crowds that you'll get on some of the public stretches of tailwaters that are really close to major cities.
Yeah, yeah. So if you got definitely not a half-day fishing trip
no.
just coming into Denver, like some
Absolutely.
Of the other ones are. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. And then you did mention, you know, you got a whole page full of hatches here. So what kind of fish are we fishing for, and what, again, are some of your favorite hatches on there?
The bows. So you got the rainbows, the browns, cutthroats, and cutbows. And I would say probably in speaking with anglers like Devin and myself, I would say some of the best hatches up there are going to be the green drakes, the stoneflies, the golden stoneflies. I talked to Devin about a week ago, and he said they're still going on. The red quills, the pale morning duns, really what it's going to be when you show up to the water, you're going to have to pay special attention to the surface. And because you have a complex hatch of more than three insects coming off at once, you'll need to select what the fish are keying in on. And usually that's numbers over size. So if you see fish that are consuming numbers of insects, that's what you want to choose. If they're going for the size of the big drake or the big stonefly, that typically means that the hatches have transferred to something larger or something later in the day. So I would definitely say that you'll have 4 or 5 great hatches to choose from and really just thoroughly scan the surface and find out what they're feeding on.
Wow. Got to have a few fly boxes with you, don't you?
You do, yeah. Have a good selection of flies.
That river. Well, good, good. And any particular stories or experiences you had down there fishing that you wanted to share?
You know, the Canales itself, some of the best experiences I've had on that water is just being able to challenge myself and others that I fish with, where we would show up, and my first trip to the Pinnacles, I remember walking down and getting to the water and looking faster currents and some heavy seams off of rocks. Was fishing conventional water, and then all of a sudden I saw a fish pop up out of the water in a fast seam riffle just next to a little rock cliff. Couldn't believe a fish would be holding there, but after casting in the run 10 times, ended up hooking 3 fish and proceeded on for the rest of the afternoon, and we only spent that day about 4 hours on the water. But all the fast water seams lived up to their name, and that's where most of the trout would hold. So I love the fact that it's challenging, and the fish think outside of the box and hold in unconventional areas.
Great, great. Sounds like a challenging river to fish for a number of reasons.
Yeah, I'd say challenging, similar to the South Platte, but rewarding. So I think that's for anglers who really want to go out and experience fish, that every fish that you land is a challenge that you met, and a beautiful fish to release back into the wild, I think is great. So it's one of those treasure trips and memories and areas that you can expand your knowledge and become a better angler.
Right, right. Good. Well, we need to take another quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk more with Landon Mayer about trout hunting Colorado's four seasons. Royal Gorge Anglers is a full-service fly shop on the Arkansas River in Canyon City, Colorado. They provide both walk, wade, and float fishing guide service on the Arkansas, South Platte, and several private high country ranches. They specialize in fly fishing education and work to assure that everyone taking a trip leaves being a better fly fisher. For the best service and the most fun in the Southern Rockies, visit the folks at Royal Gorge Anglers, the gateway to Southern Colorado. Located conveniently on US 50, only 45 minutes from Colorado Springs. For more information, visit their website at www.royalgorgeanglers.com. That's www.royalgorgeanglers.com. Or call 888-994-6743. That's 888-994-6743. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Landon Mayer about trout hunting Colorado's four seasons. So you're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Landon Mayer about trout hunting Colorado's four seasons. If you do want to ask questions, just go to our homepage and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as we can tonight on the show. A couple questions came in, Landon, off the Internet. John Ward in Ithaca, New York says, do you tie your own flies?
I do. I tie 70% of my flies. Flies that I do not tie are ones that I oftentimes don't have the steps to tie, or ones that I lose on a regular basis, whether it be fish or on vegetation on the river's edge. But started tying when I was 13 by a great man in Colorado Springs, Gary Alameda, who now is a shop owner of Gilly's Fly Shop. And from the age of 13 and on, it became a passion, addiction, hobby, and now part of my career. So I definitely do tie and enjoy being able to add things to different imitations that provide better fishing experiences and allow more fish to see the fly and make it appear more natural.
Great, great. Another question came in, Ed Golden in Prairie Village. He wants to know, and this is always the tough question, and we haven't talked about all the rivers yet, but he wants to know your list of the top best flies for streams in Colorado.
Top best flies for streams in Colorado. So I would say that some of the top flies for various waterways in Colorado, you'll start out with the midges, Pat Dorsey's Top Secret Midge, Charlie Craven's Jujuvee Midge, and Greg Garcia's Rojo Midge would be at the top of my list. Griffith's Gnat for a dry fly, because I think that's the best midge dry fly of all time. For Betis Blowing Olives, John Barr's Barr Emerger is hard to beat, the RS2. Another great fly. Craig Matthews' Sparkle Dun is another great fly. And for all those that I just listed, if you transfer those from Blowing Olive to Pale Morning Dun and also to Trico, all you have to do is change the coloration of the body and go black, olive, and PMD like Cahill. You'll have variations for different insects. For streamers, I like Lawson's Conehead Sculpin, John Barr's Meat Whistle, the Circus Peanut. For egg patterns, you can use various eggs. I think McFly Foam works very well. And for attractor dries, you can use Amy's Ant. You can Charlie Craven's Baby Boy Hopper. For caddis, I would stick with Pooterbaugh's Caddis for a dry fly. Larry Kingery's Better Caddis. And then for the actual subsurface activity, for the pupas, any dubbing or latex fly. And then one of my all-time go-to imitations is John Barr's Graphic Caddis for a pupating caddis imitation.
I think that was about 35 flies.
Very quick, very fast. Hopefully we get that.
I think what you just did is gave five in each section. So they got their money's worth. Just fill your fly boxes with those 35 to 40 flies. You'll be all set, Ed. And that's always a tough one because they're just, you know, the answer is, well, it depends, right?
It does, yeah.
What's going on in the water, you know? So
you bet.
Always a tough one. Okay, well, let's move on to Central Colorado. And
sure.
There, again, in your book, you identified Arkansas River, Blue River, Eagle River, and South Platte River. So which one of those would you like to talk about?
I think I'm going to stick with the home waters, and we'll discuss the South Platte. And I'd also like to take this moment to let everybody know how many great people contributed to the book in this section. We have Bill Arrington from Royal Gorge Anglers, Larry Kingery, Greg Phelps, Arkansas Anglers. You've got Arc Anglers. You've got Taylor Eddington from Royal Gorge Anglers. For the Blue, Jackson Street, Pat Dorsey, John Kiefover. There's so many great anglers that contributed there. And then for the South Platte, myself, Ed Engel, Dick Rock, so many great anglers contributed there. Pat Dorsey was one of the biggest individuals to contribute to the book, and his help and passion and pursuit for the sport and his professionalism on the water is well-deserved. So a big thanks to Pat for all his help with the book as well.
Yeah, and by the way, we did do some interviews with Pat Dorsey, a couple of interviews. One was on the South Platte River, so you might want to look in our archive for that. And we did do, since we won't be talking about the Arkansas, Bill Edrington, we did a section on the Caddis Hatch down there, so that's another one in the archive to find. And so a lot of the people you mentioned we've done shows with and have contributed here as well. So great fly fishers. Okay, so South Platte. What makes it special to you besides it being in your backyard?
It's a river I fell in love with from a young age. As a kid going out with my mom, my brother, and friends of the family, I would fish that water from a young age and just fell in love with the different sections. I learned how to fly fish in 11 Mile Canyon, ventured from there and used to experience some of the great trico clouds in the Deckers area, Cheeseman Canyon, and started venturing up to the Dream Stream and above and beyond that all the way up to Tomahawk and Badger Basin. There's so many great things about the South Platte, and I think one of the biggest things that drew me to the water is that there's four main sections that act like four different river systems in their own right. So you have the South Platte, it's Charlie Meyer State Wildlife Areas, which is a meadow setting. You have 11 Mile Canyon, which is granite, beautiful granite walls through the canyon. Cheeseman, again, beautiful canyon walls going through Cheeseman, and then you go down to the wooded forest of Deckers. So some of the best anglers I've ever met come from the South Platte because it's so diverse in the way the water flows and how you need to fish it. So it's a very special waterway to me.
Yeah, very diverse, isn't it? You know, if we start there at the upper section, like you said, up by the Dream Stream, you want to, a lot of people have fished that, but you want to kind of describe that in more detail?
You bet, yeah. I think the Dream Stream is a wonderful fishery. It's where I do a majority of my trips on the South Platte. I also do some venturing to Deckers and through some of the other services, the 11 Mile Canyon and Cheeseman. But I think the Dream Stream is unique because you have 3.5 linear miles, 5.5 winding miles of public water, which is state and Division Wildlife owned. And with that water, it's flowing from Spinny Mountain Reservoir, which is about 25 feet deep, all the way down into 11 Mile Reservoir, which is around 170. The fish migrating up into that section of the water can be very large, some of the strongest fish in the state, and the reason for that is they're migratory trout, not just by spring and fall, but also during the summer and the winter months. So you can't find one specific fish holding in the run for longer than a few days before it begins to migrate and travel, and some of the largest trout in the state come from that area, so it's a great fishery.
And then, like you said, for instance, 11 Mile Canyon or Cheeseman Canyon, beautiful, beautiful canyon fishing. The scenery there is, you know, right out of a coffee table book, right?
It is, yeah. 11 Mile Canyon is a great area. The top 2 miles are catch and release, which a lot of anglers like Dick Rock fought very hard for to help out and make that happen. 11 Mile Canyon has one of the largest biomasses in any river of the state, and the numbers of trout on there and the clear water settings and opportunities for sight fishing are incredible. And some of the best hatches in the state, as Dick Rock mentions in the chapter, you can almost time your watch by them to where they're going to bloom every day. Cheeseman Canyon, you have to hike in, you have to make the commitment, and if you really want to make the commitment, you'll hike the whole thing in a day or go way upstream from down low or down low from up high at the dam. Great fishery. Pat Dorsey's a master in Cheeseman Canyon as well as other sections on the Platte. So it's, I'd say the Dream Stream and Cheeseman Canyon are some of the most technical waters in the state. And just like the Conejos, if you can fish them effectively, then you know that you're taking your fly fishing to another level. And then Deckers, beautiful setting. And the tragedy of the Hayman Fire has been a challenge for Deckers with sediment and everything flowing into the water. But it's coming back. And This last spring, we had a great blowing olive experience going into the summer. A year before that, we had caddis blooming, so it's coming back and another great fishery to pursue.
Right. And what kind of fish are we fishing for in the South Platte?
South Platte's going to be rainbows, cutbows, brown trouts, and cutthroats. And I would say a lot of the South Platte is made up of quality brown trout and quality cutbows, and also the introduction of new rainbows and also the Snake River cutthroats, which can grow very large and are a great fish to pursue. So we have all four.
And this is another river where there's some large, smart trout, right?
Very large, very smart, and fish that you really need to hunt down. So I think as a trout hunter and extremely high level of fish that will hold in conventional water and unconventional water, the biggest thing about the South Platte trout is we see a ton of movement from above. So I don't believe that trout becomes spooked by seeing the fly in the water. I believe it's the movement, the traffic from above. So the biggest hint for any angler on the South Platte is view from the high banks and fish from the low banks.
Okay, okay. And what about the season?
Season on the South Platte is, that's a great question. It's the four-season playground. You have the winter months, very challenging for the midge activity, but very rewarding. You can truly see what the Arctic state of a trout is, and especially in the 11-mile canyon, watching the fish just barely sip in midges. So the winter months are great, a chance to escape the crowds. Summers are always very nice because it's made up of tailwaters, so typically they won't be blown out and unfishable. You've got great complex hatches during the summer, some big trico clouds, caddis, PMDs. During the fall, you've got the transfer into blueing olives, and, of course, on the Dream Stream, the run of brown trout, and also the lower section fish running up. So I think every season is very good. One of my favorite seasons on the South Platte by far is the summer, just because there's so many great hatches, so many hours of the day that you can be effective, and to watch the fish feed uncontrollably to where they're missing your drift every time, not because they don't want to eat your fly, because they can't see it while they're consuming naturals. Every half second is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Question came in on the Internet. Brian in Dayton, Ohio says, landing outside of the South Platte, what other river in Colorado would you consider to have the best winter fishing?
Oh, great question.
Absolutely.
Great question. I think the best winter fishery outside of the South Platte, I would definitely have to say, is the Frying Pan River would be one of my favorites. In addition to the Frying Pan, the Taylor, which we'll discuss tonight as well. But I love the Frying Pan in the sense that the fish are challenging. They're gorgeous, consuming mighty shrimp, changing the pigmentation of the body. So the fact that you're tucked in the valley there in the Frying Pan and near the Roaring Fork is definitely one of my favorite waterways to fish during the winter months.
Well, before I move on, any stories or experiences you want to share about the South Platte?
You know, the South Platte, I'd say the coolest experience I've ever had in the South Platte was being able to take my children up there to fish and watching them explore the water and learn and understand what fishing's all about and become better anglers. So every day is a new experience and a new challenge, and it's hard to pick one, but I think the first day you take your kid up on the water, especially a unique fishery like that, and watch them catch their first rainbow or brown trout is something you'll never forget, so that's definitely mine.
And before we leave this area, we did have a question from Bob in Maui, Hawaii. He said, I have a week to spend mountain biking and fishing near Avon. I will have every early morning and afternoon to fish. I've done okay in the Eagle by the train tracks in Minturn. Where else should he go? He'd like to find some slow, deep pools with some feeding fish in them. So if he's in that area, where would you send him?
Yeah, he's in great hands because the Eagle has so much access. And, again, this is a waterway that I think out of any in the state is the most overlooked because it's next to 70 and 6 and major roadways. But if you travel down, he's going to have access to Edwards, the treatment plant, Gypsum, Avon. There's so much water. It's hard to pick one specific area where he's going to do well because the key to the Eagle is just timing it at low flows. But I would definitely say that Edwards is a good location. Gypsum is a great location, and the treatment plant, those three will serve him right, and he'll be able to experience the Eagle, especially this year, in lower flows after big runoff where it's starting to fish very well.
Okay, great. Well, let's move on and talk about northwestern Colorado. And, again, the chapters in your book are the Colorado River, the Yampa River, Frying Pan, Roaring Fork, and the Williams Fork. So which one do you want to talk about?
Let's talk about the Yampa. And the Yampa as a chapter is a lot of knowledge in there from Steve Henderson. Great contributions there by John Barr, great anglers throughout the state. Colorado River from Bob Dye. I'm also Pat Dorsey on the Colorado and the Williams Fork. The Frying Pan River by Will Sands, who did a lot of work, and Kyle Holt, who also did a lot of work, and Tim Hang. So there's great contributors there. But I definitely think the Yampa is a very special waterway, unique, and one you want to pursue, whether it be public or private water.
Okay. And what can you kind of describe the sections? And this is up by Steamboat Springs, by the way.
It is.
Kind of describe the sections of that.
Absolutely, yeah. You can start up. The best spot to start is definitely going to be, I think, for access to numbers and size is going to be below Stagecoach Reservoir. And that's the tailwater that flows in its make, and it has a lot of access as far as the short section, similar to the Taylor River, but it's going to have water beyond the parking lot where a lot of people think it's public. It actually goes further downstream from there. So you can find great water in state wildlife areas and below the dam. From there, if you fish at the public water in town, right in the town of Yampa, there's great water there that you can pursue and fish. Great hatches, great fish that move about. And then further downstream near Craig, outside of Steamboat, then you've got some great fishing in there as well. So those three sections, I think, are the prime. And one thing I want to point out, and by pursuing shops and great anglers like Paul Russell, Steve Henderson, and Steamboat Fly Fishers, if you go up there, the private water access on the Yampa River, for most areas in the state, it remains private. The private water is still private there, but the landowners have a great relationship with the shop owners and the guides. So they have around 36 ranches that they can take trips on. So if you have a chance to explore the public water on your own and do a guided trip through the shop, it's well worth it, and the fish are spectacular.
Nice to know. Yeah, nice to
know. Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's always something we recommend that people do is go to support the local shops. You know, even if you all you do is buy a handful of flies and ask a couple questions, it helps them out.
Sure.
And certainly if you've never been to an area, taking a guide out, it can do wonders, you know, for your day when you don't
Yeah, for your day and just experience some waters that don't get touched, or even being able, like you said, to go in and get the flies and the information. A lot of the community of anglers in Colorado will do you right and give you the right info.
Yeah, yeah. And one thing I think about using a guide, too, is it's not just a guide to show you where the fish are. Is almost every guide I've ever used with any stature at all gives you a good lesson for the day, too. You know, you walk
Absolutely.
Away being a better fly fisher. So you're getting tutored as well as being shown, you know, which is not.
Yep. You can never have too many tools in the box.
Right, exactly. So what kind of fish are up in the Yampa?
Yampa, you've got rainbows, cutbows, cutthroats, brown trout, and a nice addition of brook trout above and below the reservoir, especially in the tailwater section. So we've got five species, and just like the South Platte and other waterways in the state, a lot of opportunities for quality fish in the 16 to 20-inch range, and then with the seasons and the higher water flow and insects and hatches, fish all the way upward into the 30-inch mark, so there are some giants up there as well.
There is, yeah. Isn't there some pike fishing up there in the Yampa, too?
There is. The pike fishing was better before they started removing the pike and the smallmouth. It used to be a really good pike and smallmouth fishery, which you can still find them in the lower stretches near Craig, above and below. But they started removing them as a predatory fish, I think it was 6 or 7 years back, and have depleted numbers. So the pike fishing and bass fishing is not as good as it once was, but there is some fish that can be pursued if you take the time and the effort to go down and do so.
Yeah, good. Good. And then what about the hatches on this river? What do we got?
Great
going
hatches.
On there? What's
your
favorite?
Good. I would think that for the Yampa River, some of the best hatches are going to be pale morning duns are phenomenal if the water's low enough for that year. Great caddis, some of the best caddis hatches. The largest trico hatch I've ever seen in my life is on the Yampa River. So big that it's almost like you're masking the sun and you can't see your partner up or downstream. So some great trico hatches, some red quills, some stonefly subsurface. But I would definitely say pale morning duns, caddis, and tricos are going to be the biggest hatches, and also having blueing olives in the spring and the fall.
Okay. I noticed you got a nice picture of Steve Henderson there in the wintertime, too, so good winter fishing there, right?
There is, yes. Great winter fishing, and I think asking stories about rivers and fishing in the state. There's also a photograph of a gentleman, Steve Hoffman, holding a big brown trout with a Moorish mouse in its mouth. And it changed my life. One evening I went down with Ross Purnell, the editor of Fly Fisherman, and Steve Hoffman, who works with Fly Fisherman and other great magazines. We went down to fish the water, John Barr. There's a big group of us fishing on the Yampa. Decided, hey, what the heck, we bought some nice patterns at Steamboat Fly Fishers, and let's go down and try them. Got to the water about 11 o'clock, and Steve Hoffman's on the other side of the river from myself, and we're fishing and swinging some mice patterns and trying to get fish to rise. And I hear, sounds like a toilet flushing to my left, and I thought there was a fish rising, so I started casting my mouse pattern. Come to find out, it's Steve, who remained silent, who had a giant fish on, and ended up landing the 8-pound brown on a mouse and proceeded to catch 7 other fish in a matter of an hour and a half on the surface with the mouse pattern. So I think total fish landed out of a group of 5 is
14 on the surface in mid-September by moonlight. So it was one of the best experiences on top water, even better than what I've experienced up in Alaska. So that was a great story and definitely changed my way of thinking for evening fishing.
Yeah, that must have been an exciting evening, to say the least.
It was.
Yeah.
A lot of screaming and a lot of hollering and high-fiving and whatnot, so it was a fun evening.
Yeah. So what, again, talking about seasons, what do you think is the best season or seasons up on the Yampa?
I think the best season for the Yampa is going to be mid-spring and fall. The summer can fish well. The winter can fish well below the dam. Midsummer, if the flows are lower, can fish very well, even if it's a high flow, not this year, I would think, with the high flows and runoff. But once you start getting the hatches coming about, you can do really well up there from the end of July all the way through the beginning of November. The trick to the fall is once the frost hits, the fishing starts to slow down. So if you can hit the water before, then you'll do better. And then for the summer months, if you can hit it when the water is dropping, not when the water is rising, then you'll do much better then as well. So I would say the summer, fall, and during the winter season, if you're in the area, just be safe with your travels. But fishing below the dam can be very fun and a lot of clear water settings and sight fishing opportunities.
Okay, great. Before we move on here, let's take a quick break here, and we'll come back and we'll talk more about other sections of the state to finish up. So we'll be right back. Front Range Anglers, a full-service fly shop located in Boulder, Colorado, provides premium tackle and comprehensive instruction and guide services to fly fishers across the country. In business for over 25 years and with a staff that averages 20 years of experience, they will give you the straight story on gear, places to fish, flies, and techniques. They publish a monthly newsletter that is one of the most informative and insightful electronic magazines in the industry. Find out more about this premier shop by logging onto their website at frontrangeanglers.com. That's www.frontrangeanglers.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Landon Mayer about trout hunting Colorado's four seasons. If you would like to ask Landon a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive it immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, we did get a few more questions on the Internet. One from John Ward in Ithaca, New York asks, what are your favorite hooks and model numbers to hook the giant trout on, and size?
Sizes, I usually don't go below size 20. I think one of some of the smaller midges I'll use is maybe a 22. Reason for that is just to have the hook gap. I prefer 24-88 heavies if I can get away with it. John Barr turned me on some great hooks from Wapsie, which are called lightning strikes, nicely tempered hooks that are very strong. I'll use 200Rs as well for some imitations, but it's a little bit more flimsy than the 88s and the 87s, so I would say that's one of my favorite flies to use. 200Rs I use a lot as well with the longer shank, but definitely want to stay above 22. I think anything below 22, and you can hook fish, but being that it's so small, you're not guaranteed that you're going to get a proper set or get the proper power before something happens. So I definitely say that's some of my favorite model numbers and sizes to use.
Okay, and you said that you don't like to go below 20 just because of that.
I don't like to.
Yeah.
I will if need be. You know, if you're fishing settings in the winter months where you're going size 24, 26 midges and you need to use 7X, by all means, you can get away with it more than with trout being in a lethargic state. But there's a lot of fish throughout the state that are very strong and quick at throwing hooks and shaking their heads. So the 88s have the straight eye, unlike the 87, which have a down eye, so you get a little bit more hook gap. And if you do a heavy, then you don't have to worry about the hook straining out if you do get into the big one.
Okay, another question came in on the Internet, Treg in Moscow. He says, what about terrestrials? What's your favorite, including foam flies, for terrestrials?
That's a great question. Getting ready to throw some of those. I'd say one of my favorite flies to use as of the last 2 years is a Fat Albert, which is a hopper pattern with long rubbered centipede legs, which makes it look like a tarantula in the water. But I would say the Fat Albert's a great dry fly. Charlie Boy's hopper or baby boy hopper and BC hopper. I like imitations. I think the key is when you're fishing terrestrials or you're fishing imitations on the surface that are large is to have them ride low, whether it's a mouse or a grasshopper. The other thing to remember is all the hoppers that start bouncing and landing on the water surface, they're all going to reflect different colorations on the bottom of their bodies. So last year was green. This year could be yellow. It could be red. So I think matching color and size and allowing the flies to ride low becomes very important.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Great tips. Okay, let's talk about our last section here, which is mm-hmm. southwestern Colorado. And we've got there the Animas River, Gunnison, and the Taylor. So which one of those would you like to talk about?
Let's talk about the Taylor. And with the Taylor and the other rivers, the Gunnison and beyond, Jason Booth, Will Blanchard, John Flick, Pat Dorsey, a lot of great anglers contributed to these sections, and Jason Booth for the Taylor River in specific contributed a lot of information, and Jason's been tailing down there or guiding down there for quite a bit of time, I think close to 20 years, and one of the high authorities on the waterway and very well respected and just great individual and great guide. So thanks again to him for all his hard work on the book, but the Taylor River is definitely a unique waterway.
Okay. And what makes it special to you?
I think the Taylor is special because of the large trout, which a lot of people know about. I think it's also special because the lower stretches of the water with the green drakes and the caddis and PMDs and so many different bugs that pop off, or it's not pursued on the lower stretches of public water, which allows anglers a chance to really move around beyond below the dam, which is a catch and release section. And the fish there, to have a fishery within the U.S. that supplies trout that can exceed 20 pounds, knowing they're resident river trout and they can only be accessed within 350 or 300-yard stretch of water, I think is something truly remarkable, and you really can't find it in any other state.
Wow. But not so easy to fish, right?
It's not so easy to fish, and I think that's one of the biggest draws for a lot of experienced anglers. When you fish the Taylor, I think the first thing you realize when you're on the water is you're not in the company of anybody that has not experienced the water or is very familiar with sight fishing or very selective trout. So you're not going to have as many spooked fish from anglers casting over them, but I think the fish are just wary because the water's clear. They're very large in size, and they like to move around to the private water before they enter the public water and start migrating around there.
Okay. And, again, you want to kind of break down the different sections?
Yeah, you've got the section below. You've got above the reservoir, Taylor Reservoir there, Taylor Dam. Then you have the Trophy Tail out below, which is in the book. Further downstream, there's campgrounds, Cold Springs, Lodge Pole. Down from there, you've got access all the way down to Rosie Lane, 1 mile south bank. So you have the lower in the middle. Then you have the lower down near Almont, which is 5 mile, and then Almont itself. And all the public water access there are pull-offs on the side of the road, again, with campgrounds to stay overnight. And it's similar situations to other waterways where you can travel along the river, whatever you think looks great. As long as it's public, you can pull over and fish it. And great opportunities there for some excellent dry fly fishing, especially, I would say, for the green drakes. I think the Taylor River is one of the best green drake fisheries in the state of Colorado.
And what about the river itself? Does it change character much as it leaves the Trophy Tailout area, or does it pretty much maintain its character down?
No, it changes character some. The Trophy Tailout, I think, has some bigger holes like the Avalanche Hole, the Hog Trough, and some of the waters above and below that are a little bit calmer. It gets fairly steep further down you go. They do a lot of rafting on the water, so it's more of a freestone setting with pockets behind rocks, boulders, drop-offs, or depressions. So you'll have different makes of the waters it moves down, and then it'll get calm again. So you'll have fast and slow water as it meanders down all the way into Almont.
Okay. One side note I wanted to mention, we were up there fishing the Taylor one day, and then we heard that the salmon were running up the East River, so we went down there and got a whole bunch of salmon and had a blast fishing for those as well. So that's available in that area too.
You've got the East, the Taylor, which meet together, and then you have the Gunnison running downstream. So the three rivers at Almont is something you want to pursue, not just the Taylor. You've got the East and the Gunnison as well.
Yeah, right. Okay, you said that your favorite hatch was the green drake on there. And what are the other hatches like there? And looks like it's pretty, you've got about two-thirds of a page there of hatches.
You bet. I think some of the best hatches there are the green drakes. In addition to the green drakes, some of the best betas, blooming olive hatches I've seen are definitely in the water there, especially during the fall months, September, October, when you get the cloudy days, calm settings, not a lot of wind, the fish will rise and really consume those quite a bit. The caddis in the afternoon or the evenings, a lot of anglers fish the Taylor until the light drops. As soon as the light drops over the cliff, you can't see in the water as well, so a lot of anglers leave. The pressure is not as big on the water, and the evening caddis fight can be incredible. I've seen numerous 8 to 10 pound fish consume big dry flies on the surface. And then also during the winter months, the midging, fish coming up eating midges. I think it's a very unique setting when you see an 8-pound fish coming up to sit midges, and the body mass on the trout is so big that it's lifting half its body, not its head, out of the water to sip in a size 22 mid. So those are some of my favorite hatches, and I think some of the best times to fish those hatches.
I noticed there's a picture of Jason Booth here.
Yeah.
Kind of a small fish.
Yeah.
30 inches or so, right?
Right, right.
But I think the interesting thing about this is he says that he wears, this was in the wintertime, and he's wearing snow camel jacket to blend in with the background. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. That's
the necessity of stealth fishing there?
It is. Yes, it's stealth all the way, and I think the amazing part about that is that he's wearing the white camouflage to reflect the 20-foot-high snowbanks. And great anglers like Jason Booth and others throughout the state, and myself as well, is when we're fishing and you're trying to be stealth when you're dealing with very selected trout, try to think about what the fish is seeing above and beyond what's on the river's edge. So if you're fishing during white snow-capped peaks, you want to wear white to match the camouflage above and behind you. You're fishing a wooded tree area or a forest, try to match the green forest trees. You're fishing the South Platte with blue open sky, try to fish wearing blue so you match the sky behind you. You're fishing Cheeseman Canyon, try to wear burgundy red so you match the cliff walls. And that's one of the tips and tricks from a lot of the great anglers, is trying to stay stealth just by matching what's above and behind you, knowing that fish see up at a 45-degree angle.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So is it primarily rainbows in this section?
No, it's rainbows, cutthroats, cutbows, browns, and you have a good mixed variety of fish in there. Unique thing about micey shrimp fisheries like the tail of the frying pan and the blue, the trout change pigmentation because of the amount of protein they're receiving from the food source. It's very unique and not uncommon to catch a fish, let's say a brown trout, to where it has a pink belly. Normally it'd be yellow, normally it'd be orange, and sometimes you'll catch a rainbow that's bright red from its lateral line all the way down to its belly. So the coloration and true beauty of the fish's markings are incredible and well worth the travel just to see it.
Yeah, in fact, that picture we were talking about with Jason, is you described that fish just right there with the rainbow color all the way through into his belly. Yeah,
it's amazing, yeah.
Yeah, we talked about their winter fishing. Obviously, it's got some decent winter fishing there. What do you consider the best time of year to fish the Taylor?
You know, I'm going to go opposite of winter or spring. I think winter and spring can produce large trout, and definitely a fun time to fish it. My favorite time to fish the Taylor, I'd have to say, is during the summer and fall months. I would say probably my favorite time is the fall, in the months of September, October, when the flows are dropping in the lower, and the fish have been feeding on various hatches throughout the year. While they're receiving pressure, the flows are so high that a lot of the fish are not hooked or even seeing on natural objects like split shot. And again, you'll get the betas or the blowing olive hatch, and it can be incredible in addition to what you can do in the summer for the green drake. So I think the fall is my favorite season there.
Okay. Any stories, experiences you want to share from fishing that river?
Yeah, the Taylor is just amazing. I do have a story about the Taylor. I was up there, a good friend of mine, and this is the experience that we had as far as watching fish eating something small on the surface. We were fishing one day and had a good day, a lot of fish moving about, and it was, I think, the month of February, very cold, and ended up hooking and landing a fish. And we released the fish that my buddy landed, which was about 13 pounds. And after trying to pursue this fish and watching various trout rise, 5 minutes after we released it, we walked up on the bridge near the avalanche hole, looked down, and I think we counted that trout in a matter of 5 minutes rose 30 times to midges. And watching a fish of 13 pounds coming up to sip midges, I'm sitting there asking myself, okay, how long should I have waited to see if this trout would eat the dry fly versus doing subsurface? So that's some of the experiences you'll see. And I think just watching a fish that's over 10 pounds eating such a small food source really helps you understand how opportunistic trophy trout truly are.
Yeah, and, you know, we've gotten a question before on shows, does the size of the fly determine the size of the fish? And I guess you just answered that question.
Yeah, it does not. I think anything that is an easy food source and one where they don't have to expend a lot of energy. If they do expend energy, they need to be replenished back from nutrients consuming the food source, which would be larger food sources like crayfish or mice, something like that. But large trout will eat a size 22 midge or size 22 trico just as much as they will might see shrimp or a large stonefly floating downstream.
Well, we didn't close out this section. We didn't talk about the Animas River, but Mike in Florida wanted to know what the best time to fish the Animas was. What time of year would you send him down there?
Great question, and again, great information from Will Blanchard and John Flick there and other great anglers. Best time to fish that waterway in the Animas is probably going to be the winter months. A lot of the anglers leave. The flows are low, fairly clear, and by self-experience it a few times, and John Flick and Will Blanchard and others experiencing it on a regular basis, that can be some of the best fishing during the winter season up there, so don't pass that up, especially with the nice bluebird days of sunny conditions when the trout are really on the midge feed.
Great, great. Well, we have a few more questions that were sent in advance of the show, and I'd like to address these. These are just general fishing questions, but I know you'll enjoy answering these. So let's try to close out the show with these. Jake up in Fort Collins says, Landon, would you say that great presentation comes first over fly selection for most fish? Does fly selection even matter if your presentation is unparalleled? And then he goes on to say, I love your books and do quite a bit of sight fishing. I'm 15 now and hope to be at your level soon. The challenge is there, Landon.
Good for him. Good for him. That's a great question, and I'm very happy to hear that. I have a lot of clients that started at the age of 12 or 13 and watching them adapt and adjust and become skilled anglers and great people above and beyond on and off the waters is truly incredible. So good for him. And to answer the question, presentation is definitely more important than fly selection. I think that you can have the right fly, and if you do not get that fly to drift in front of or to the side and swing through the trout's viewing lane, then a lot of times the fish won't even eat it. But if you do have that right drift and the fish does see the fly, then you're definitely going to be able to have more hookups and catch more fish that you see. I express some information or knowledge above and beyond that just to say that the biggest way to be successful when you're sight casting the trout that you can see and you're getting the proper presentation is making sure you control depth. Try to determine when the fish is feeding just below the surface, mid-column or on the bottom, and by doing that you can adjust your split shot, your weight, or in some situations remove the weight to where you're drifting close to the surface. So I hope that answers your question, and look forward to seeing him on the water and great things that he'll do in the industry.
Great, great. Brian in Dayton, Ohio says, were you able to do much, if any, sight fishing with extreme runoff in Colorado this spring and summer?
Great question. And that, it was a challenge, definitely a challenge in some of the waterways, but I think some of the best sight fishing opportunities can be during high water. I call them dirty water deliveries. And when the fish are on the river's edge and they're feeding so heavily because the food supplies are above and beyond the insect where they'll have aquatic worms, crustaceans, cranefly larvae, you can pursue and fish to trout where you may not see the whole body. You may just see the fin movement or the white of the mouth. But in addition to that, with the dirty water and the high flows, you'll have more cover and the fish won't spook as easily. So the edge fishing and some of the waterways that were a little bit dirty with not as much pressure were producing some great fish.
Okay, Chris in Evergreen, Colorado says, I'm still learning how to train my eyes for sight fishing. Naturally, it's easier when searching for larger fish. Is it feasible to learn to sight fish for smaller trout? Because I live near Bear Creek, and while a few reach 12 to 14 inches, most are in the 6 to 10-inch range, and I'm usually prospecting because I just can't see them, even in low, clear water. Any tips for him?
Absolutely. That's a great question. And being able to become the best sight fisherman or trout hunter you can possibly is going above and beyond just looking for the larger trout. So I'm very happy to hear that he's trying to search for the smaller fish because that's truly what trains your eye the best. The things I find on smaller trout, what I look for when I'm doing trips or I'm out fishing on my own, first thing I look for is objects instead of looking for the whole body, even if the trout is small. And a lot of times smaller fish have very quick movements about their body. So when they feed below the surface or they feed deep or side to side, they're moving faster, battling heavier flows or sometimes calm water because they're eager to eat the food source. I see a lot of tail movement, so I would encourage them to look for tails. On smaller fish, they oftentimes move their whole body because they're only 6 to 10 inches, so you see a lot of flashes. And just go beyond the white of the mouth, which is oftentimes almost impossible to see, and try to look for the movement, the glint of light off the side of the body, and look for the fish to be lifting and dropping in the column. A lot of anglers expect to see fish that remain in view the whole time, but sometimes you may only see that object for a fraction of a second as the trout lifts or goes side to side in the feeding column, then it drops back down into a holding position. So don't always look for the obvious view the whole time. Look for those quick movements.
Okay. A couple more questions. Two, I'm going to kind of tie together. George in Alabama asks, what's streamer time for browns in Colorado? And Josh asks, from Delta, Colorado, do you use articulated streamers? And if so, what do you suggest for browns during late summer through the fall? What's your opinion on typical lines for streamers? So did you kind of address both those questions?
Absolutely. Great questions, too. Bugger time, streamer time is definitely starting in the month of August, going all the way through the months of, I would say, mid-October. And you can do fairly well going into November, depending on how cold it is. But a lot of trout, especially brown trout, tend to get aggressive, start possessing more color, and migrating all the way as early as the month of late July, late in the month. August tends to be more par for the course, and the later you go, September, October. Things to always remember when you're fishing streamers is dark water delivers. So try to time late in the evening. Try to time cloudy conditions or a spike in flow in dirty waters. And as far as flies go with articulated leeches, I do, in streamers, I do use both. I think that when you do articulated patterns, something you can do to increase your hookup and land ratio is always make sure that you have a stinging hook or you have a hook that's connected to cord or monofilament that trails at the bottom of the fly so you don't get short strikes. So if you have articulated, just make sure you have a stinging hook or two flies on the fly itself, similar to Circus Peanut and some of the other great imitations out there as well.
Yeah, is Circus Peanut the Kelly Gallup pattern?
It's not Kelly Gallup's pattern, but Kelly Gallup has a lot of great patterns that are very similar. I think he's got the Sex Dungeon fly. He's got a few other imitations that he does a lot of large streamers with articulated movement in their bodies, and, yeah, he uses the stinging hooks as well.
Yeah, and again, we did a show with Kelly Gallup on streamer fishing that people might want to look up. Okay, one last question, and then we'll call it quits here. Bob Mann in Divide, Colorado says, Landon, I always enjoy seeing you on the stream and appreciate your assessment of what's going on. How much of a homebody are really large fish? If you turn a large cut on a streamer in late summer in a deep slot, do you think all other things being equal that it will be there next year? Good question.
Great question. Great question, Bob. And it's a pleasure to also see many anglers on the water as well. I would say that the chances on waters that have a lot of fluctuation, which the state of Colorado does, chances of seeing that same fish the next year are less than 50% because the fish tend to move. They like to relocate. River bottoms move. Flow of the rivers change. So I would say that the fish is probably going to find an area, especially after the runoff this year, that you won't have to expend as much energy consuming the food source. But when they do travel, knowing that, they're probably not going to move that far. So they may drift downstream a couple bends or migrate upstream a few bends. But typically when they do move, if they're migrating, they'll move up and down. But summer fish tend to hold and feed. So if you're going to pursue that fish in the fall, there's a good chance the fish will be somewhere within 100 to 300 yards of where you caught the fish prior or had the fish take the fly.
Okay, great, great. Well, we've covered quite a bit of territory tonight, Landon. And
stick with
me for a few minutes because we're going to give your book away here and you're going to help me judge the winner. So unfortunately, it's time to wrap things up here, but we're going to be giving away 1-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, a 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine, and Landon's latest book, Colorado's Best Fly Fishing, courtesy of Stackpole Books. So stick with us here, and we'll give those prizes away just shortly. Family Ties, that's T-Y-E-S. Family Ties is an organization which uses a shared interest in fly fishing and fly tying to enhance youth development and family relationships. They utilize resources in schools, communities, and businesses, and they invite your participation. Go to their website at www.familyties.com. That's family, T-Y-E-S.com. Family Ties, where every fish is a trophy and every kid is a hero. Just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, what did you think of this show? Just click on that link and leave your comments. We surely appreciate it. Well, now it's time to give away our prizes, and the winners of our drawings are randomly selected from our registration database, and if you didn't register yet, it's too late now, but be sure you do so next show because we're always giving away some great, great prizes. And tonight, the first one we're going to give away is for the Federation of Fly Fishers, a 1-year membership. To find out more about the Federation of Fly Fishers, go to fedflyfishers.org, fedflyfishers.org. And our winner of the one-year membership tonight is John Douglas in Montana. So, John Douglas in Montana. So, congratulations, John, on winning that membership, which is always a great organization to support and great membership to have. Then, we're going to give away a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine and another great magazine out of Calgary, Canada. And our winner of that is Walt Cole in California. Walt Cole in California. So congratulations. Both of you gentlemen, we will contact you after the show to get your information so that you can receive these prizes. And so look for that email from us and respond to that accordingly. Okay. Now, Landon, we're going to give away your book. And I came up with a two-part question. I've been doing this lately to make it a little bit harder for folks. This is a question. You mentioned your favorite river for winter fishing. So I want to know Landon's favorite river for winter fishing, Colorado, and his top terrestrial fly, the name of the top terrestrial fly that he mentioned tonight on the show. So this one should be a bit more difficult, and we'll see. Landon, just waiting for somebody to respond here. They got a little bit of typing to do. But again, Landon's favorite river for winter fishing and the terrestrial that he gave. So, well, I'm going to read this back to you, and you tell me what you think or if we should look for another answer. It says, South Platte, best winter. Frying Pan, also good in winter. Fat Albert, Animus, fishes best in winter months. It's kind of covering a lot of bases there.
It is, but definitely correct information, so I think that's a winner.
You think so? Okay. Well, we'll give that to Treg Owings in Moscow. I think that Idaho. I think Treg won something else recently, so he's doing pretty well. So, Treg, again,
congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations. You're going to get that book on Colorado's Best Fishing, and you might have to leave Idaho to use it, but that's okay. It's not far away. Treg, send me your information again, your mailing address and so forth, and you can do it in the info box there on our homepage, or send it to info@askaboutflyfishing.com so that we can get this mailed off to you from Stackpole Books and Headwaters. So thanks for playing, and thanks for answering the question correctly. And Landon, thanks for writing such a great book and being with us tonight.
I appreciate it. Thank you for the kind words and the support, and it's always a pleasure to give back to your show and anglers and our great sport of fly fishing. So I'll continue to try to do my best, and I look forward to hopefully seeing everybody on the water.
Okay, well, I'll look forward to seeing you in New Orleans in a couple of weeks at the retailer.
Absolutely, yes. Yep. Be there with Ross Reels and Scientific Anglers and 3M. So I'm looking forward to the show, and I also want to say thanks again to everybody that contributed to the book, great anglers, Brad Beefus, John Gearock, Tyler Beefus, Barry Reynolds, other great anglers contributed as well. So 42 people in the book, but the whole state as a community really made this project come together. And most importantly, my wife, Michelle, for putting up with some of my text insanity.
Okay, you always need that support, yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, our next broadcast will be on August 24th. Now, this is not 2 weeks, but 3 weeks away, because I'll be going down to the fly fishing show in New Orleans. So August 24th will be the next show, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern, as usual. And on that show, we'll be interviewing Topher Brown, and our topic for the show will be Atlantic salmon magic. Topher Brown worked as a professional guide and has fished for Atlantic salmon in Canada, Iceland, Scotland, Norway, and Russia. So listen in to hear his secrets on hooking up and landing these incredible ocean-going fish. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, Royal Gorge Anglers, and Front Range Anglers for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. That's 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. We'll be happy to explain the options available to you. Don't forget to visit our website, askaboutflyfishing.com, and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.